Hello, this is Evan Murray. This is Music Industry Insights. You can get a hold of me at evan@musicindustryins.net. evan@musicindustryins.net. Write me an email to ask me questions, start a conversation, whatever pertains to these podcasts or to the music business. I am more than happy to talk about. Really interesting podcast you're listening to right now. This is about a rising star from the country of Greece. Greece, the birthplace of logic. We can say, maybe some people will argue it's Macedonia or, even older or whatever. Definitely the birthplace of the Olympics. And rich, rich in history for mathematics, philosophy, and the sciences. Basically led, Western civilization out of, led them out of living in caves and completely revolutionized our world. Absolutely, no doubt about it. All the historical evidence is there. This isn't something people are assuming or guessing. It's factoids. So I talked to this artist named Theodore, and he's extremely passionate, and he's done some really cool things. I actually met him in Sweden in 2018. His band absolutely blew away everyone at the conference. People were trying to describe his music. They weren't describing it very well. They were using all kinds of Radiohead meets, I can't even remember, Radiohead meets Pink Floyd meets Metallica or something. I don't know. But besides all that, Theodore is an artist. He's kind of at the helm of his band or art, his project. And he's done a lot. I met him in Sweden. Like I said, he's done a lot of touring. He played on Tiny Desk concert in the United States. That's a big deal. That's a big deal these days. Tiny Desk concert has over 1 million subscribers. So it's big exposure. He's also played in really amazing venues in Greece. So he has really, not only has he kind of got a name for himself outside of his country, which a lot of artists, that's how they actually get found, is, going to other places, reinventing themselves or meeting new people and getting excited about new things. But he's also really developed himself inside of his own country. Personally, he's just a great guy. He kind of has this new, I hope this is the way the new rock stars are, He's got a charming personality. He's super passionate about his music. He's creating concepts. It's very intellectually driven. It's not we're cool, wear these jeans, look at my shoes. This guy is 100% music and, art integrity. And it's just so refreshing to talk to somebody like this who has such a bigger picture and also is so integrated psychologically and emotionally into his craft. I like to scan his career every once in a while. I like to check out his band on Facebook. That's Theodore. I like to check him out, what he's doing on YouTube. I just like to check in on him every once in a while because he's one of these people that is evolving. He's like watching a natural creature. His career is like a life form, with his brain. And anyways, please do listen to the podcast, listen to the conversation, especially if you're an up-and-coming musician, especially if you're in the management. And it's really good for anyone to listen to this because we really talk about a scope of so many things, from the personal side of the whole entire business into the intersectional, traveling and creating and producing and all of the work and, team support and all of these things. So as always, Take what you can out of it, extract what you need, and enjoy it.
Hey, this is Evan Murray with Music Industry Insights, doing these interviews here with artists and companies from around the world to gain a greater understanding of the music industry globally and to find out what everyone's up to. Today, I have an artist from Greece. His name is Theodore. And Theodore, welcome. Thanks for being here. And please introduce yourself to everyone.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm Theodore. I'm an artist from Greece. And I write music and I travel the world to perform it.
And what part of Greece are you in?
I'm from Athens, and this is where I live from. I live in the last 6 years now. I used to live in London for a while.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about Greece to get to gain some inside knowledge about it. What's the population of the country itself?
We must be something like 11 million.
Okay, there's about 11 million there, and. Yeah. What's the music industry like in itself? Is it still really culturally bound, or is it like kind of international? What do you think the music industry is like?
It's an interesting thing. It's interesting to call the music industry an industry. Okay. It is an industry, and it works quite well when it goes to this folk pop Greek music, which is the mainstream stuff around here. Of course, trap and hip hop is quite big too, and however, the last years, it looks like this indie music and English speaking music is going quite well. And the last years, though, these guys that they did independent indie music, they started to change their lyrics back to Greek, which is interesting. All the indie music now, most of the indie music. Right now, the trend is to sing in Greek, which means that we are not a very export-ready country for our music. And most of the bands and the artists that they are trying to export their music and to travel the world and become international artists needs to do everything by themselves.
Okay, wow, that's quite a bit of information, and I think it's quite interesting, actually. I mean, Greece is kind of like the epicenter of where like Western civilization kind of evolved from, and logic and mathematics and philosophy, and I mean, even kind of religion to a certain point as well. So, there's a huge human interest about Greece always, historically. And it's really interesting to talk to someone that's doing quite well based out of Greece. I mean, the first time I ran into you guys was in Sweden in 2018, and you guys actually got the favor of the Rolling Stone writer there. You were in like, I think you guys were number one. He made you like the number one favorite band he saw.
Really?
In Liveheart in Sweden. So that was, I have been following your career a little bit. I saw that you guys went over to the United States and played on Tiny Desk concert. I saw just the other day you played with like the Athens Symphony Orchestra. Is that correct?
The Thessaloniki State Symphony Orchestra. Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, there are some significant things that you're doing, and, I want to talk to you about that. Let me ask you something like this, for yourself, what does the word success mean to you?
Yeah, I think I started doing music because I was sure that when I'm sitting on my piano by myself, I get this orgasmic emotion that there's not another way to explain this. It's an orgasmic feeling when you play music and you actually let yourself into it, and then when you do that in front of two people, this emotion is multiplied by two. But if you then play this in front of 1,000 people, it's multiplied by 1,000. The same orgasmic feeling. So I believe that to answer your question, success to me would mean to have this feeling multiplied by the largest amount of number. It's like an addiction. It's an addiction, actually. And this is why I do music, I believe.
Well, I know. I really appreciate the honesty of your answer, because, I mean, a lot of people are trying to summarize this by, like, you know, just kind of making up all these different ways of trying to explain physical success. But, I mean, you're talking about it in a very personal way. You know, so I think that's the truth, right?
Yeah, listen, that's the truth. Of course, this, if I have this in my life, there are other other things that would come as consequences. But the reason to do that is only this emotion, and I believe you cannot pass through all this suffering situations to become a musician and an artist if your reason is not as difficult as this one, because it's a difficult thing. It is an addiction.
Let's talk about your music influences. Now, I want to kind of separate this into two categories. So, like, I mean, I know that the music industry, the pop music industry, is international, of course, but I want to talk about, can we separate, did you grow up being inspired by your culture, by, you know, regional music also as well as international? And can you talk about the differences?
Yes. And we can do that. And in Greece, we have a very large traditional music and rebetiko music, which came to Greece from the Greek refugees that they came from Turkey. Today's Turkey to Greece in like the 20s or something, we have all this traditional stuff which is inserted in Greek people's crowd's blood, this is a very major influence for my life and my music. When we talk about the traditional music and rebetiko, which has to do with a lot of bouzouki. There are artists like Vanvakaris or Tsitsanis that you probably never heard of, were a great deal to me. And Hatzidakis, of course, who is a Greek composer, he did a lot of cinematic work and a lot of pop work. He was a huge influence of mine. And probably Vangelis Papathanasiou, who could be the only person you know from everybody I'm talking about, the only artist. Vangelis was a member of the Aphrodite's Child band that started in France in the 60s. And that's the Greek part of my influences. And of course, I grew up listening a lot to The Doors and Pink Floyd. And I passed quickly through a punk phase. And because that was in not even in high school, it was in primary school. When I was 12 or 13 years old, I passed through this skate punk. It's like Blink 182 and Sum 41 and stuff like that. I quickly rejected all that. Nowadays, I love listening back to the music I used to listen, of course, but it's not part of who I am. And then I ran into Radiohead and Sigur Rós. I believe it's as an artist, my biggest influences are the Radiohead and the Sigur Rós and the National, Bon Iver, and stuff like that. And there is a part of me because I studied classical music, and this is also a huge part of my life and my artistic influences. Artists like Steve Reich or Max Richter are deeply inside my music too.
And I think that's, you know, like when you're traveling through the different artists that you're saying has inspired you, I think that they also have some space, like when you listen to your music, you know, when you listen to Theodore, the music, I think there's elements of the influences that you've taken. You know, I think that, you know, your music is emotional. It's atmospheric, you know, but it also can drive really hard at some points as well. So I think, you know, I think you've really translated the inspirations you're talking about. I think you can, there's a lot of creative space there with the influences that you have. So that's interesting. Cause I mean, I think a lot of artists, it depends what influences people too, right? I mean, it can be a variable. So that's like do you kind of carry yourself when you go onto an international stage, like when you're in another country, are you identifying as a Greek artist particular, or are you kind of like an international citizen? Like, is your culture and where you come from very important to you, or is it being an artist more important first?
I think I won't really answer this question because I feel like both. My country and my origin is very important to me. Not because I choose to most of the time, because I cannot do in any other way.
Right, it's who you are, right?
it's who I am, and because I lived in London for 5 years, and being away from home really affected me, and really affected my art as well. My country and plays a big role to who I am. On the other hand, without the pandemic, I am 150 days away from a country traveling and playing music. Which makes the whole world
your playground.
it sounds weird. Yeah, not really, but I want to believe that I am a citizen of the world, originally coming from Greece.
Okay, well said. And what was the motivating factor? I mean, I know we talked about, you know, it gives you this tremendous feeling, like you put a lot of effort into learning, and then you get this tremendous feeling from, you know, creating and performing. But what was the deciding factor when you were growing up that, like, you knew that this was the path that you wanted to take? Like, what made it different from, say, you know, going into education and trying to be some other type of professional, or say trying to seek something else? What was the factor there that really spoke to you and you knew you had to be a musician? You knew you had to follow this path. What happened there?
Yeah. Keep the reference from the your first question and my answer.
The orgasm. Emotion, yeah.
was a huge thing, honestly. Although when I was 16 years old, until I was 16 years old, even though I was spending my whole day playing music and trying to create bands and rehearse and try to find school music festivals to go and play.
It became your whole life.
And it was. Music was my whole life. Although I was saying back in that day that I want to be an astrophysicist, a cosmologist, which was weird because I was very bad in math and physics in school. But I liked the poetic side of it and the romantic side of it. And I loved reading books about
the theoretical, like the imagination of the universe and how it works.
Exactly. And I was saying that I was doing that. And nobody believed me that I would do that, my teachers or my parents. And it was this day that I had to make an application. That was when I was 16 or 17. Yeah, to make an application to see what I'm going to study abroad and what path I'm going to do. And I remember it was my father coming to my room, like at 1 o'clock, said that, look, I always said to you that you should do anything you want in your life, and I will really support anything you want to do. But if you don't go and study music, you should find the way to pay for your studies in London, because this is what I wanted to, what I was going to do. So he actually said to me that I can't do anything I want to do, but I'm lying to myself because I would always be a musician. And this is a very rare father and son story about becoming a musician. So he actually pushed me to face my truth.
So what you can say, what I can get from that is, like, your father was trying to be very realistic about who you were as a person. And I guess he could see that you were kind of a do or die type of person as well, right? Where maybe you're trying to make everyone believe that, hey, like, I can do many things, but he probably saw in you that, like, once you were involved in this music, like, that was it. Like, that's where you were going.
And it was very true, because I also knew that, okay, I'm gonna study astrophysics because it sounds cool, but I'm gonna be a musician. I knew that. I just wasn't saying that.
Okay. Well, I mean, and that's a kind of defining moment too. Like, a lot of kids will do it in rebellion. You know, some of the lucky ones have that support, but it sounds like your dad kind of, like, he knew you pretty good, obviously. He must have known you pretty well.
I believe it's every father's duty to believe in their kids. So.
Right.
So it means nothing of if I'm good or not.
What about the three? So going into music now, we know a little bit about your history, about, you know, like, where you're coming from, why you're doing it, where you are, your influences. Mm. Tell me about the three greatest experiences you've had being a musician.
Yeah. I'm gonna start with playing at the Temple of Zeus in Athens.
Okay, that's crazy. I mean, that sounds absolutely nuts itself.
And I have the Parthenon on my left hand and the Temple of Zeus on my right hand, and I was playing in front of 1,000 people there.
Wow, that sounds surreal. Can you talk crazy about that a bit?
I didn't even play music from my albums. I was commissioned to write music for Buster Keaton's film, for a film festival. The Cameraman, if you have seen that, and it's a silent film, and from the 20s probably, and this Athens open air film festival asked me to write an original score for this and perform it live for the first day, for the opening ceremony of the festival. And they gave me, it was at the last moment, and they gave me like 10 days to compose and rehearse the music.
I had a month,
but I was on tour when they asked me to. So I couldn't actually practice or write the music. And I remember being in Portugal and being like, probably I should cancel. And I didn't know the venue that this would take place. And then I was in Portugal and they asked me, they told me that this is at the Temple of Zeus. And Temple of Zeus is very famous for, apart from being very famous because of what it is, but also Vangelis Papathanasiou played Mythodia, this piece he wrote for NASA. This was a NASA production with a huge orchestra and a huge choir and stuff. And I really love that place for that also. So this was a great deal for me. And in 10 days, when we went back to Greece, I composed and rehearsed at the same moment with the band. There was a screen. On my right hand was Temple of Zeus. a screen behind me and the Parthenon on my left hand. I love that it was a score and not my music, because in my music I need to be very involved in what I actually do. I need to sing, I need to play, but playing a film score and having just a time code on a screen and knowing where you are means that I have a lot of silence also, because somebody else is playing on me, the music. So I had the chance to really enjoy this moment. And I'm going to choose that as my favorite moment.
Yeah, you say enjoy, and all I can think of is the stress. Like, oh my God, that sounds so stressful.
Stress is a nice, interesting ingredient in enjoying a moment on stage.
Okay.
Without being a little stressed, the gig has a value. The performance has a value. This doesn't mean that the stress should swallow you and make you only be a stressful guy on stage, but being a little stressed before you step your foot on stage plays a huge role in the success of a gig.
I think you touched on something very important there, and I mean, I think this is goes without saying for independent artists or people coming up, is like, there is no question that you're going to interpret things a certain way once you're in this kind of environment. Like, there is performance stress, but you're talking about how you utilize that for actually your strength. So it doesn't like cave you in, but it actually gives you more energy, gives you more power, more focus, right? You're using it in a positive way.
This takes a lot of work and a lot of time to be able to use it. It's not a very easy thing to do. It needs a lot of time on stage, because I'm playing for 8 years now, probably. I'm 29. I started when I was 20, so like 9 years, and it's something that you get to learn if you really try to analyze all the emotions that you have on stage and before you step onto. And I can also get out of my system and not only enjoy the concert, but understand that, okay, now I'm feeling stressful because this is how it feels when you before you step your foot on stage. And now I'm going to play my first note and I'm going to forget the whole stress, and I know that everything is coming, but the most important thing, which is a next level on what we are talking about, is being able not to think about it. When you, the best performances I have done in my life is when, from the time I sat on my piano and I played my first note, when I stopped thinking for the whole gig.
I've seen you play live in person, and one of the things that people commented on and what I noticed, I mean, like, it almost seems like you're there physically, but mentally it seems like you're transcendent. Like, you've gone to
and that's my goal.
Like, you're with the gods somewhere, you know, like you're in heaven or something, you know, like spiritually.
My goal as an artist, and also my personal goal for the addiction I talked about earlier, is to be able to, when on stage, I need to have and to feel this connection between me and my musician that we are on stage, and the audience that came to the show. And I need to not only to respect that, but I need to find a way to connect with them. And I need to express what I am there to express, but to give it to the audience, and they need to feel whatever they want to feel. But this connection between these two different emotions, I don't know if you understand, it's quite difficult also in Greek to explain.
Right, now we're getting into philosophy here.
Yeah, when this connection happens, it's a magical moment. And this is a spiritual moment, not a physical moment for me.
And I guess that's, you have to try to, like, you know, intellectually, you have to try to see how that can line up. And then spiritually, it just has to kind of come together. Is that kind of fair to say?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it is a fight, because it's a fight with the audience as well, because there are so many concerts that you go there and the audience knows exactly where they came, what they came to see, and they know who I am, and they are there for me, and they understand. So they are there for this emotion as well, probably, because they are closing their eyes and just being there and moving slowly. And there are festivals that, with audience that they don't know me, so I need to find a way to convince them without saying a word that this is how this concert will go. But it's not their responsibility to be in that way. Their responsibility is to do whatever they want. It's my responsibility to do that, and if I don't manage to do this connection, it is my failure as well.
Okay. I mean, your number one experience is, I mean, I'll just say it honestly, like, it's surreal. I mean, like, I was a touring musician previously. I had lots of interesting experiences and being a music professional traveling to places. But what you're describing of your most kind of sacred experience of being a musician, it is surreal. I mean, like, it's attached to history. It's attached to, like, so many intersecting things. And I mean, it sounds very special as well that you're also conducting also inside of a silent, you know, inside of a motion picture as well. So it's just, I mean, the gravity of what you're talking about is there is a surreal component to it. What possibly could come number two and number three for you? Like, what are other experiences that you've had? I mean, that one is like almost like, you know, yeah, I played on the moon, you know, it's like,
No, that would be nice. it was an amazing emotion playing a tiny desk.
Okay, that's a big deal. Like, now now we're talking about internet marketplaces. Yeah. And so you got, how did you get that opportunity? Tell me about that experience. Unfold that for me. Talk about
it. You want me to be honest or sell you a dream?
I want you to really just hit me with the truth here. Yeah. Okay.
So here's how things go. And I enjoy being honest in things like that, because things like Tiny Desk gives an opportunity to an artist to create a success story. And use it to their favor. But explaining how you get opportunities like this probably ruins the success story. But in my belief, it doesn't, because if it is a success story or not, this is debatable. But in my opinion, it is important to explain how things work, because what it works, it is also a combination of hard work and being lucky, somebody would say. But I wouldn't say that being lucky. I would say that being because you work hard and you try to be everywhere, you get to be on the right place at the right moment as well. So this is how it works. And how Tiny Desk worked for me is probably an example of how everything works, probably in life, when you want to get opportunities. I hope this won't get to a TEDx talk in how I'm talking about it. So I was doing South by Southwest. I got an invitation to play at South by Southwest in Austin. For the first time, I've played there twice. And why did I do that? Because we played at another festival and we ran into some organizers from South by Southwest, and we tried to, with my team from United to Fly, which is my label, and we tried to talk to them and try to send, okay, this is who I am, this is my music, and et cetera, et cetera. And said, okay, just do an application, we'll see. We make an application for South by Southwest and we actually get invited. which is a huge deal on its own. Playing at South by Southwest, and it was my first time going to United States, so I managed to book a tour around the South by outside Austin as well. So there is this thing that if you go to probably to all the showcase festivals, there are so many opportunities that they are hidden. But you need to search and ask and talk to people to find them. And one of these is, at South by Southwest is this Austin 100 playlist from Bob Boylan, who does Tiny Desk from NPR. And to do that, every band sends one track, and Bob Boylan is listening to all the tracks, and I believe he does. And then he chooses 100 songs to put on a Spotify playlist. And so I sent my song Are We There Yet, and it made it to that playlist, which is a great thing. At the same time, that means that Bob Boylan knew who I am and listened to my song. So I understand that he, because I have seen how he travels in Austin and how he walks around the venues when South by is happening. And he goes to all the shows that he chooses to do according to all the research he has done. So I play my concert and I see a guy with a hat, and it's Bob Boylan. He's there for the show. And when we finish, I stop my show. I go down to see if I can meet him, and he's not there. He has left. So I say, okay, that was it. Great. All right. So we, after a show, we go for an after show drink, and we stayed there for till 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I started to walking back to this Airbnb that we were living, and now it starts the metaphysical part of it, but it's how it works when you are there, and this is how it works. So I walk, and there is Bob Boylan with his associates from NPR, and they are recording the podcast to play at NPR the next day of all the reviews of all the shows that he has attended and what he believes of it. I didn't see that, but I hear, oh, Theodore, come here. And I turn my head, and it's Bob Boylan with his associates, and I go there, and we do a small interview live because they were recording the podcast. And that was it. And after that, I have a contact with Bob Boylan, who does Tiny Desk, which is great. So my album, was Inner Dynamics, was about to be released a month after that. So we sent with my team my album to Bob Boylan, and he replied very kindly, and I was very happy for this. And he did a premiere of Disorientation, one of the singles, at his All Songs Considered show. And then on the thank you for doing that mail that we exchanged, he actually said, okay, you should come and do a Tiny Desk when you are back in the United States. So and I was like, oh, great. Let me book a ticket. I'm coming now right now to do a Tiny Desk. So I said, no. When you are on tour in the United States again, let me know, and we'll make this happen. And then it was at Live at Heart. I thought that you can play at South by only once. And at Live at Heart, I met with one of the organizers again, and he asked me if I am doing South by again that year. And I said, no, I did that last year. No, you should do it again. Just make an application. I go back and I do an application, and we get our invitation after that. So I booked a tour again in the United States. We did from New York to we did Nashville, we did Tennessee, we did a show in Los Angeles. We did so many places, and we went to Austin, and then we went to Washington to do a show in Washington, and we did our Tiny Desk show. And that's it. That's the story of how this happened. And I can tell you what happened after that.
So, I mean, Tiny Desk, I mean, like, you know, I mean, if people don't know, I mean, Tiny Desk has the biggest artists in the world on it. right? Like that is a premier show. And I mean, for you to be, you know, welcomed on that show and to perform on that show is quite significant. Did it have any residual effect on your online marketplace as well? Like, did people find you on YouTube from that? Did you get an influx of numbers or new fans from that? Like, did you see
I got a lot of booking inquiries straight after that from markets I was never trying to play, like India or like also in Dubai and more stuff in United States. The thing is that when you get opportunities like that, you should have all the assets that they are coming after that to utilize it 100%. And I am saying that because we are on a showcase panel, Live at Heart panel, which is a great conversation of what, even if whatever happens to you, what is next and how you utilize that. Playing at Tiny Desk is a big asset for me. It was a great experience, first of all. I had so much fun. I was very proud. I was red the whole time for my pressure. I really enjoyed being there. I really enjoyed watching it after that. I really enjoyed meeting the people that are working for Tiny Desk. The thing is that when you do things like that, after that, you need to be ready to run like crazy and have
to
all
use
the assets
it,
that
right?
they're coming
it's
up.
Like a, it's like a
you need
panel.
To have a single out. Yeah, you need to have a single out coming very soon. You need to have an album coming out very soon. You need to have a tour coming up to use it properly.
Yeah, fire. Keep have, the fire alive, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if you deal with big things like that as your actual goal, in life, and you achieve that, and they say, great, I achieved that, let's go home now, then it's a missed opportunity. I didn't do that, what I believe, because I'm very strict to myself when it comes to things like that, what I believe is strategic-wise, I should be in a very different, I should have a different strategy for that particular moment.
Okay. Because now in hindsight, you're looking back at it and you're like, you understand.
I could have achieved so many things because of that after that. And that's what I'm basically saying.
And it is forever online. So, I mean, it is still a moment of your career that you can still utilize as well. I mean, it is an achievement. Right, like it is a monumental.
No. It is a huge stuff. I cannot tell you how proud I am and how excited. I just try to make our conversation more interesting. Just saying, okay, I'm a fucking great guy, and I toured the whole world, and I've done a Tiny Desk and played at the Temple of Zeus, and this is who I am. This is not so interesting.
Well, tell me the third experience that kind of sticks out for you. And by the way, like, I just want to tell you, I do appreciate the insides that you're talking about, because that was actually one of the questions. The last question I was going to ask you was about advice and about exploring your thoughts about, you know, development. Mm-hmm. So when you're giving us these experiences, it's really awesome that you're kind of divulging all this information. I mean, it's really interesting. So I appreciate that very much.
Just one small parenthesis. Because I am from Greece, Greece is not an export-ready market. It doesn't really support anybody. There are no ways to be supported to go outside. When I went back to Greece from London, I had to do everything with my hands. I was my own label, my booking agency. I was my marketing. I was my PR. I was really doing everything, doing my rehearsals, booking the shows, booking the flights, going there, as all the bands are doing when they start, which is fair. Every band should do that because they should know how this works. The only difference is because I've learned so many stuff about how things work while doing everything because I want to play music. at the end of the day. I chose not to change that until now. There is a team around me. There is a label. It's called United We Fly. I founded it. I'm not working on it anymore, thank God. there is a certain way I did stuff, and I did it with my hands. Everything I've done, I've built it actually with my hands.
Now,
a lot of people helped me.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people helped me, but nobody told me what to do.
Right. And that I want to kind of focus in on that for a moment, because I think that's really important to talk about. Is that, do you feel that maybe because you had to work so hard to create opportunities for yourself and the PR stuff, that is it a bit stifling for your creativity? Like, is that why you say, I'm so happy I don't run it anymore? Is that where that comes from? Because is it taking time away from the actual creative process? Because that's a lot of right brain and left brain thinking, right?
And it is. And my whole album, Inner Dynamics, is about that. It is extremely suffering. I used to suffer because of that. Because trying to be a creative personality, you need time, and you need to be synchronized with your the magical part of human beings, the one that is close to the gods, as you said earlier, the dreamy part of yourself, which is not very realistic, not very focused, not very not on the conscious part of your life, more to the subconscious of it. But when you need to organize stuff, you need to be a completely different person. You need to work on your conscious, be very smart, understand what people are saying, be good with numbers, don't forget the numbers, have a great memory, don't forget facts, don't forget people, having the ability to talk with others and convince, and force things upon others, or even beg to happen. These are all very difficult things. And they have nothing to do with being an artist. An artist doesn't beg. An artist doesn't fucking beg, and an artist doesn't try to convince nobody with words. Right. An artist says, this is who I am. I am the best guy in the world, the best you can get, and this is who I am. And if you don't like it, I don't care. Go elsewhere.
Right,
you cannot do that as a person that tries to organize everything.
Because the organizing person has to have all this diplomacy, right? It has to know how to write an email and know how to be polite. Yes.
Know how to write an invoice. An invoice to get paid. And this is how it is. I'm very glad I'm not doing that by myself, and I'm not working at the company anymore on a day-to-day basis, because I can focus to be an artist. But still, having done all that and know how all these things work, I know more of what I want to do. And because of your last question, what's the advice? Is to do all this, you need to know why. You should find, as an artist, a great reason why all this should happen. Because after doing all this, and after you have invested your whole life into that, physical or not physical assets of your life to this dream, nobody tells you, and even if you do everything quite well, nobody tells you that this can last forever, and you can be sustainable, and you can live out of that, so you can keep being an artist. And because the possibilities are always against, it's great to find a great reason why you do that, and know that you can enjoy every bit of this journey, every bit of being on stage, every bit of writing a song, all of it.
So it's like, if you want to use your heart, you have to use your mind, you know, to get there, kind of thing. And I think there's something that you're saying there that's super important too, is that the ability to get into certain areas and being able to be proud of yourself for doing things also keeps adding to the energy to keep pushing it forward too as well.
And sorry to interrupt. And this is why I am very strict what happened to my Tiny Desk experience, because having done Tiny Desk is a huge thing, but I always should think, okay, what's next?
Right.
I did that. That's great. Okay, what's next? Mm. Because that's the only way you can keep on doing what you need to do and never stop and keep on writing, trying to write good music and keep on trying to do good shows.
Was there a third experience that is notable for you? Was there a third experience that you really, you know,
when we talked about doing this conversation for Live at Heart, I was trying to think about it, and I had something in my mind. But in between that, I played with a symphonic orchestra live for the first time
yesterday, right?
on Monday, yes, in Thessaloniki. That was my first concert after COVID with the band. I did some shows with just a piano, just one probably, and some online stuff. But that was my first concert, and I played with a symphonic orchestra. This was amazing.
Yeah, that sounds pretty amazing, to be honest.
I've worked with the smaller ensembles, but never such a big scaled orchestra.
What, was there a lot of preparation for that? Like, was there a lot of rehearsals or?
No.
No, you had all the sheet music and everything. So you're a classical musician, which would probably help working with other musicians as well, right?
Mm, yes, I have recorded with the symphonic orchestra. There were some of my scores that were ready. It was the first time in my life that I asked for help for my scores, and I asked a great friend of mine, Gary, who lives in Greece now. He's an English guy. To help me put everything together, because I had such a short time and in a very stressful period for me for different personal reasons. And he helped me put all the scores together and make sure that all the markers, and this is the most important thing when you don't have a lot of rehearsals with an orchestra, is to make sure, and you play as a band, so there are a lot of rests and cues to come in and go out from the orchestra, is to have a lot of markers to explain where you are at the song, so the conductor can understand. So Gary helped me do all that, and we sent the scores to the conductor. They did one rehearsal by themselves. We did 5-6 rehearsals by ourselves in Athens, because it's a different city. So we couldn't go to Thessaloniki to rehearsal together. And then we traveled one day before, and we rehearsed at the theater with the orchestra, which is we played once every song to manage to make sure we know what we are doing.
Okay,
and that was it.
It's pretty huge. I mean, yeah. I mean, the three experiences you're talking about again, like I think, are pretty surreal, and maybe also super kind of interesting because there's some cultural component in there as well. When we talk about, like, so I want to bring this back a little bit. Like, when we talk about influences, you know, like, people are always reaching into the past, right? Like, we're always reaching into, like, the bands we used to listen to when we were young and the first bands we discovered and we loved. Like, and I appreciate that can keep us stoked maybe for the rest of our lives or always be that element. But as you mature and as you have these, like, life-altering experiences that, you know, very famous people that you used to idolize, you know, you're having experiences now that are equivalent to what they have done too. So when you find yourself in this position, you know, this psychological position where you're like, hey, I'm what, you know, you're becoming a top tier person. You're having top tier experiences. Are new influences, you know, being brought to you psychologically? Are you being inspired by other elements of life, or does it stay the same for you? Does it stay the same that it's in your music box? Or are you, as you become an equal to these great people that you were inspired by, do you start getting new influences?
I want to say one thing before that. I'm trying to be very careful of when I'm thinking my experiences and trying to make them to see if they are equal to the people I admired my whole life. It's a very delicate thing for me because it goes two ways. First of all, I'm afraid that if I think that, probably I'm wrong. and then at the same time, I'm afraid that even if I think about that and there is even a small percentage that I am close to that, I'm afraid that if I think like that, I won't experience anything else. So that's why I'm very careful of on where I'm putting myself in terms of level and all these great musicians that are always.
You still want to, like, yeah. So you're, I understand that too. Like, you still want to achieve things. Like, you're not, you don't want to look at, like, oh, yeah, I conquered, you know, I'm conquered everything.
Yeah.
No.
But still, yeah, but I have done things in my life that I'm proud of, and that's great. I'm a very happy guy.
Right on. But influence wise, like, are you still drawing from the same well of inspiration? Or because of your experiences, is there new aspects of inspiration as well?
There is. I always focus when I write my music to the philosophical aspects that I think by myself or discuss with very specific people in my life. These are the major influences that I use to write my music. I always try to have a specific topic that I really care deeply for a long time in my life. So probably I'm still writing music for topics that concerns me since I did my first album.
But these might be timeless topics, right? Like, if it's
and they are. Now I'm writing I'm trying to finish the mixes for my fourth album, and it has to do with space, but not really space. It has to do with humans, how they should evolve to something else, and it's a story like Space Odyssey. There is a guy that is traveling and having to leave Earth and trying to find a new place to live, but he actually develops himself and evolves and to something more spiritual. And all these things are things that I'm constantly thinking about. It affects my work and my music a lot when I'm traveling, because when I'm traveling, I have a lot of time for myself. Because being on tour means that you are 8 hours in a van with people that you are 1 month together in a van for 8 hours. So you have said every possible thing. So everybody's very tired and everybody wants to keep calm and having 8 hours for themselves. And people are wearing headphones or reading books or sleeping and something. So in being in a month and having 8 hours per day for yourself, not to do anything and just let the van bring you to the next venue and the next city you have to play, gives you so much time to think. And I believe so many great ideas that I felt that I felt they were useful to me came through this this path.
It sounds like the way that you're looking at music is through not only like a composer's eyes, but also a literature writer. You know, someone who writes like you're looking at it from a writer and a composer lens. Where, I mean, it sounds comprehensive. You know, like there's an imagination, there's a story, and there's something. You know, maybe it touches on many aspects of that journey, but it sounds like, you know, you're creating a You're almost like creating a tiny world in itself. It sounds like maybe your album is like a peering into another dimension or peering into another person's world or something. Is that kind of sound comprehensive to you, or is it kind of much more abstract than that?
No, it's not. I think the way I'm writing my music is I'm choosing this topic as a writer or as a filmmaker.
Right. Okay. That's great. So yeah,
and I have a story, and I'm trying to have chapters, and every song is a chapter on a record. That's why I'm not very good in Spotify. I don't do singles. I need to do a whole conceptual album, and this is very tough. I need to find ways to overcome either my personal problem or Spotify.
Neil Young. I remember Neil Young once said, he said, you know, some artists take a picture. And he said, some artists paint a picture, and it sounds like you, Theodore, like you're creating a movie. Like they're like these albums are like you're creating a storyboard.
Yeah, this is what I'm trying to do. But then it goes to these abstract ways. After I have a good understanding of what I want to say as a film or with the chapters, then it goes to this abstract. Part of writing the actual music, but keeping in mind that what I'm writing for is this. But
okay, so the idea of what's happening comes first, and then you're kind of filling that up with lyrics and music. Is that correct?
The idea comes first, but then you utilize a lot of ideas that came abstract music-wise. Mm-hmm. You say, okay, this is who I am. And everything connects in a magical way when I do music. It's either in my head or it is magical, everything connects perfectly. And say, now it makes sense because 1 month ago I was doing that, so probably I have that in my mind before I realized I had it. I like that. I really enjoy thinking like that sometimes when I do music. And I sit down and write the music, and what I do next is probably what I do wrong. what troubles me the most lately is that if I do the whole music of the record and then I have to do the lyrics of it, then I spend a lot of time not having lyrics but having music, which is the worst thing that can happen to somebody.
Okay.
So I try to avoid that all the time. And then what happens to me is that I suffer for quite a long time, believing that, okay, the music is not great, and then the lyrics are not coming to me, and probably that was it. I have done three albums, and that's it, and probably I'm not going to write anything else. And I'm a big failure because I based my whole life on the fact that I am... This is a feeling that it comes to me for some time, and then sent my stress on this, and then boom, one day everything makes sense. I have all the lyrics, I have all the music, and it comes together. So, and it's there.
So very self-critical, like you're always trying to, you know, be the best version of yourself, it sounds like. You know, like sounds like you're your hardest critic.
I try to be the best version of myself, and then I fail.
Okay.
And then I'm sad of that, and then somehow everything comes back together, and I say, okay, for this time period of my life, I was a good version of myself.
Okay. That is, it is interesting. What can you tell me about also, in, you know, after the creating process, there's also the process of having to decide what to do with the music. And is there countries that matter more to you than others? Like, are there specific countries you really want the band to develop in and gain a huge following? And what countries are you interested in doing this inside of? Can you talk to me about that? Like, is there a focus on that where you want, or are you kind of looking at a big picture? Like how are you handling that?
Again, it's a different thing, how I think being an artist are trying to administrate and make a strategy.
The business person and the artist, right?
Yeah, artistically, I can tell you the differences in the countries when I'm playing, the difference that the audience have. Which is a very interesting thing, and I've played many times in different countries, so I know that they have specific elements that they are similar or different to each other. For example, I don't understand why in Germany people dance with my music when I play live. That's one thing, which is great, and I love it, and I enjoy so much. Probably this happens in Hamburg mostly. So that's just the artistic side of my life. Business wise, what I would suggest is to, because nobody can push at every door that you have in front of you, you have to make sure to gather all your strength and make sure that you're actually pushed to the markets, the international markets, are in a way that something will you'll take something back from it, so you can use it to be stronger and push to more countries next, or more markets, or more aspects of your life.
So for you, it's not particularly like, I want to be popular in these countries. It's about having the opportunity to kind of, you know, gauge which are the best ones to be popular in. Is that fair? Is that a fair statement?
It's about making priorities, because I don't have a reason to want to be big in one country and don't care about another one. Artistically, I have not. But that's why I started with this. But artistically, I told you in the beginning that I need more and more and more people to fulfill my
orgasms.
The live orgasm. To do that, you need everybody.
Okay.
But I need to start somewhere. So what we are doing is, and what I would suggest also is to make an experiment, a trial period, and go and understand which are the countries that they treat you well first, make 3 levels of it, first priority, second secondary markets, and and other markets that they can help you with the first and second priorities you have, as paths on tour, let's say. And but when you do that and you choose to focus on a specific country, then you need to make sure that you have create the whole picture for the support of your music, which means that you need to have one management whenever, anywhere in the world, you don't care. But then you need to have a record label that either is at that country or will distribute your, will have a distribution deal with that country, and you'll have a physical part of there. And then you'll have a marketing, part that has to do with Spotify, and you have a PR for that country, and you have you do a marketing thing, and you talk to with your distributor, and you try to make into a Spotify playlist on that specific country. And then after all this happens, and you get some reviews, and you try to have a radio plugger, and you got to try some airplay and some reviews for the album and some interviews there, and after, and some social media campaigns, and try to push the specific countries. And after you do that, you need to people at that specific market see you for the first time, and that's how you start. Then you need to go there and see, and give them the opportunity to choose if they want to attend your show or not. To do that, you need to have a booking agent that works at that specific country and knows the promoters on that specific market. But even if you don't have that, because nobody will trust you in the beginning, you can be your own booking agent. And that's a story. You can be your own booking agent. Try to find support slots on that country if you cannot fill the audience. But if you have done everything else, then and you have this means that you'll have the attention of the audience if you have done everything I said in the beginning, from marketing, management, Spotify, radio, and social media. You have done everything you can, which means you have the attention. So you can go there, book a show, and they need to see you there. And after they see you, they have seen the whole picture of you. So then they choose if they follow you or not. So when you go back home and think, okay, what I'm doing this time on the next campaign I'm doing, on the next album I'm doing, you have data on the market. So you choose, okay, I did this in that country, didn't work. Probably I do something else, or I don't go there, I'll go somewhere else, because there it works. And because what you need is, you need one country, or you don't need to be very big everywhere. In the beginning, you need one place to have an interesting following to be able to convince the next market, the other markets.
Creating your story, essentially. Ooh. Like, yeah, you need a place to start developing your story. And that story is what you can hand to other marketplaces and say, hey, take, you know, let's try to create.
This is what happened in Germany. You are in France, use it. Because they see proof that they can believe in you. Because that's another interesting thing, if I have the time and if you allow me. When you start with your music, and when you start with your career, you play at the same time to the real audience, which you care about, and you perform for them. Because they are your target and you care about them. But at the same time, sometimes everything you do it for the industry people. The one is because you need audience to grow organically and have a word of mouth and have an audience to be able to do bigger stuff. And at the other hand, you need industry people to believe in you, to help you have more audience. Because at the end of the day, audience is what you need. We are artists. We do the business of people loving us. And so sometimes you play for the industry people and not for the audience. And sometimes everything you create stories for them and not for the audience. And the industry people, they don't really care about the art so much. They are there. They are in the industry of making money, and that's a hard thing to say. And but we should understand that it's realistic. They are in the industry of making money. They would be fired if they don't make money, or the company will close if they don't make money. So, and they need a lot of money to be able to do some art sometimes, and say, okay, I will believe in that. Probably I won't make some money, but I'll do it because I like it. And you need to have money for that. Which is horrible artistically, but it's the truth. So, having said all that, you need to create stories for the industry people and try to convince them. Try
that to there's value. Them that there's value. Right? Yeah,
that there is value for them and for everybody. And at the same time, keep being honest and pure to your audience, to the real people, that this is why you do everything else. You are selling out some dreams and some ways and you feel sometimes that this is cheap, but it's not, because you are doing it to serve the audience, and this is the biggest value an artist should have, serving the audience. But to serve the audience, you need to have access to it.
You have to have access to the audience.
Yeah, exactly. They need to know who you are. After they see you, then they can choose if they like you or not.
Well, I think this, I mean, what you're talking about now, like we're traveling through so many modes, like of your experiences and then your influences and the kind of whole entire philosophical scope of the music industry. And I think what you're touching on now is almost like the most important ingredients to somebody's developing career. You know, like you're really coming from a place of experience and saying like, hey, this is kind of the way it works. And this is the kind of way, if you work at it on this, you know, on these levels at this aspect, you can try to see some results from that. You know, so I mean, this is a body of the energy and the work that you've put in for years to come now. So, I mean, that, I think that's super valuable for independent musicians now too, because people are really, in this day and age, like, not everyone is really sure how to do these things or how they should go about doing these things.
No, nobody's.
No, yeah, because it's like choose your own adventure nowadays, right? And the thing is, to be really honest, because you're experienced, you probably know so much more inside of this than actually these quote unquote music professionals that are showing up to all these, you know, as delegates to all these music conferences. Because I mean, you're living it. Like, you've lived this for the past.
I've done all the possible mistakes.
Right. So you got the scars to prove it, kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's valuable, Theodore. I think what you're talking about here, and also your experiences, and you can really, I get a really good feeling that you're very passionate about fulfilling this, you know, journey in your life as well. And I think that you will really appreciate your experiences. And from those experiences, it gives you a great sense of energy and a great sense of understanding even more of who you are. It sounds like there's a whole evolution process in what you're doing as well. You know, like, you just keep leveling up, let's say, of, like, you know, your understanding. And how does that, when that, like, so if that makes sense to what I'm saying to you, do you foresee a point in your life where it's like mastery? You know, are you headed for this point of like, hey, you're either going to be a global success or you're going to be like a music industry master? You know, like, is there ever
I don't care about being a music industry master.
Right. That's happening.
I couldn't care less. I don't know what
it's
to
the
do.
Art. It's the art, right. It's the art that matters.
And this is the most interesting thing, because you have to do everything else until somebody comes and say, okay, I think you do your stuff and don't worry. But the thing is that until this happens and you have to do everything by yourself and all this music industry stuff, and all this hurts so much, and it takes a lot of time of yourself, and it has a lot of pressure and needs a lot of work. It makes me understand more and more and more that I do this as a sacrifice because I want to play music.
Right.
And so after I do all that and I spend a whole day managing my stuff, and I go to the studio and I just do a rehearsal, I enjoy it so much because I have passed through something that I don't care so much to be there. I believe every day that passes, I am more sure and sure that my choice to be an artist and a musician is the right one. Because for this, I am willing to do anything else.
What about collaborations? Have you explored any kind of international collaborations?
Artistically? You mean artistically? I have worked with Elias Grandi, a great conductor at Qatar, with the Qatar Philharmonic Orchestra in Doha. We did all the classical part of my previous album, and that was a great thing.
Wow.
And he was a great musician. That was one thing. And collaborations. Probably this is something I should work more on. That's how I understand. I've done a lot of collaborations in Greece with Greek artists. Being on tour together or playing some music together. But now that you're talking about, I understand that I was and I am very focused on what I do nonstop. So I've missed. And also there are some opportunities that because of tough luck, opportunities of collaboration, because of tough luck I missed. Stuff, collaborations for United States that I missed because I didn't get my visa in time, and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you got someone little calling you in the background. Is there?
Did you hear that?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for sitting and talking with me. I gained a great perspective on yourself, but also a new perspective on, it's a big world in itself. The music industry, or the aspect of being an artist, is an entire world of its own. And it's really good to talk to you. Really, really great insight and really nice stories. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed our conversation a lot.
Okay. Well, I'll let you go now, but let's stay in touch. And I'm going to be following your career, and all the best to you, Theodore.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Cheers.
See you soon. Bye-bye.